I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we have a full bag today. I do have some pages of outrages that I'm going to get to. But I want to recap some of the things that have been going on because it's been, again, exciting, crazy. We have so many different things we can talk about here. And I start out with many pages of outrages, and I end up with getting through two or three of the topics. So right off the bat, we talked recently in our terms of justice about the bail reform and what goes on with bail reform. That was another show. What I'm looking at now with justice is we're looking to see the president is now supposedly going to be sending some very elite troops to these sanctuary cities. Attorney General Barr is also suing several states in our union that have declared themselves as sanctuary states because he does not think it's appropriate for a state to allow criminal activity to take place in a state and have that be sanctioned. So I guess he's going to move, not that you can do something about the state law, but what you can do is do something about having law enforcement work with ICE. Another local state to me here on the East Coast, New York, recently, we saw Governor Cuomo, you know, Fredo's brother, Governor Cuomo, go to the president to talk to him about a problem that they're having in New York. The president has stopped New York state residents from getting basically what equates to a fast pass when you go to TSA. So you can get you can apply for this constant traveler or frequent traveler type of a thing. Yeah, they do a background on you, and if it turns out, you're not a terrorist, you're just an American citizen, you get the pass number, and then when you go to the airport, you can apply that to your plane ticket, and you don't have to wait in that excruciatingly long line to get screened. And maybe to have someone, search you or put you through a screening process other than, talking to you, which is really good because I fly a lot. I fly all over the country now. And, sometimes you'll get a random ticket. You'll just get a random ticket that'll have a TSA pre, they call it, TSA pre, PRE, number attached to it, which means you can go to the TSA pre-screened line. I guess that's because you've flown a number of times before, and they know that you're not a terrorist. I don't know how they choose that on the ticket, or whether it's just random. I don't know, but I've had that several times. And it depends on the airport you're in. You go to one of the busier airports in New York and New Jersey, depending on the time of your flight, you can be standing in line for 2 hours waiting for them to search you or do it, walk through the metal detector and the gas sensor and all that stuff they put you through to make sure you're not dangerous. Now, I'm not going to say that I'm upset that they do that, because I don't want somebody getting on the plane with some kind of a weapon. I don't want to have to deal with that. But it is very difficult in how they take so much time. And then it's outrageous sometimes when you see them, pick people off the line for extra searches, and they drag these people off to the side, an elderly woman or an elderly man or a really young child, and they're going to search them as though, these people have something dangerous on them. It's all done in the name of political correctness. It's done. We have to make sure that the people that we do feel we need to search, and I'm not saying who those people are, leave that to your imagination, but there are certain groups of people that we should be concerned with. It has nothing to do with race or nationality, but it is by behavior. You see, one of the things we have to look at always is behavior. We cannot do racial profiling. That's wrong. I've said that many times. We can't do group profiling because that's wrong. What we do is behavior profiling. So we know that when you look at a group of people, you can see certain behaviors that will stand out as potentially suspicious. And then you go and talk to that person. And if you feel, based on your conversation, that maybe that person needs a little more screening, well, then you do that. And if I came off suspicious and they thought they should search me more, I get it. It'd be inconvenience, but okay. I don't know what's suspicious about me. I'm just annoyed. I want to get on a plane and go to sleep sort of for the flight. But it's interesting. When you look at El Al, the Israeli airline, they have never been hijacked. And what they do is they have specially trained screeners that go up and interview every person that's going to get on the plane. And based on the experience of these investigators, they may talk to you for 30 seconds and realize that you're okay and send you along. And if someone needs further screening, further conversation based on, you know, what they say, it's a lot like on a car stop. When you talk to somebody on the side of the road in a car stop, doesn't matter who's in the car, you have a conversation with someone and something is just not right. And it causes you to go to the next level. So that's interesting that New York is all upset and Cuomo, he said, this is just politics, you know, because far be it from Governor Cuomo to engage in anything political. You know, he would never do that. You know, you don't need 10 bullets to shoot a deer. Does anybody tell the good governor that our gun laws are not based on going hunting? That's really not what they're for. And a lot of people try to jump back on that. You don't need 10 bullets in your gun to shoot a deer when that's not really what the gun laws are all about. And all my Second Amendment friends out there, we all understand that. It's really just an attempt to disarm us, you know, disarm all the American citizens. So we're watching the president as he's going to send these specialized units to these sanctuary cities. His attorney general is suing these sanctuary cities to see if we can have them be forced to let law enforcement work with ICE. Now, I know that most law enforcement officers want to work with ICE. We work, you know, as local, municipal, state, federal, county officers. We all work together in most every instance. Everyone relies on each other for different specialties that we have. Federal agents come to town, they go to the local police because you know the roads, you know the towns, you know the people. And you work together. Sometimes when we have a case that's bigger than our jurisdiction, you go to the feds. You know, it's we all work together. But to the fact that they want to, you know, half of our Democrat friends running for president are saying we're going to abolish ICE should really make all of us be concerned. We should be concerned about why they would want to abolish this federal agency that is here to protect us. You know, they're not here to harass people. They're not here to rip babies off of their mother's chests. They're not here to put people in cages. That's not the purpose of ICE. ICE is to protect us, the American citizens, from dangerous criminal illegal aliens. Okay? There are criminal illegal aliens in the United States. You read about them every day. These kind of things are dangerous to every single one of us. Now, does that mean that there are not many, many, many thousands of very good and decent people who want to come to this country for a better life? Of course there is. And anybody who's listened to Chasing Justice knows we recognize that. Doesn't change the fact that if you want to come into this country, how many times can we say this? Doesn't it get tiring over and over and over to keep saying it? You have to come legally. You have to go through the process. You know, my family, we're immigrants. They came here a couple generations ago from Italy and from Ireland. Of course they did. And they did it legally. And they waited in line and they did whatever they had to do to get here. They had to have sponsors. That's all anybody is saying. You know, other than that, you're making up an argument to argue because you want people here. And I honestly believe that our friends on the left really just want as many open border places as they can have so people can flood in here and give people the right to vote. Because they know how they're going to vote, or at least they perceive they're going to vote for the Democrat or left-wing candidate. Which brings us to some of the things we want to talk about with our ongoing political season. You know, we are now in the political season and things are heating up. I thought it was amazing, even though President Trump is really running unopposed. He had 100-something thousand votes in the New Hampshire primary for him. Now, there's nobody else running against him, really, so that he got 100-something thousand votes, which I think is 30, 40,000 more than President Obama got when he ran as an incumbent president. Does that mean one person's better than the other? No. What it means is that there's a lot of enthusiasm out there for a Trump reelection. Now, does that mean he's going to be reelected? No, it does not. Does it look good at this point for those of us who support President Trump? Yes, it does, because it looks like there's momentum and it looks like, you know, the economy's going great and things are going really well. Why would you vote to change that, right? And that's really the question. That's what it comes down to. I think President Clinton, when he ran his war room the whole time when they were running for election the first time, it was, hey, it's the economy, stupid. Remember that? That was a tagline that they came up with because you wanted the economy to be well. Everyone wants to take care of their family. Doesn't matter who you are in this country or where you're from. You want to take care of your family. You want to have a job. You want to have a lifestyle. You want to provide things for yourself and for your families. And a good economy allows you to do that. Now, I see the president is also looking at tax cuts 2.0, which would target the middle class this time around more than it did, you know, previously. The last time was for business kind of and for people with higher incomes, but it really stretched across the nation. Look at how the economy turned around and boomed. And isn't that really the first thing we want to happen? I would like to say this whole SALT thing that they did to these liberal states. President Trump, there's a lot of us out here that are not liberals, and we don't have any choice of who gets voted in to our governorships and everything else here and raises our taxes. We can't outnumber the people that are in these states. So, you know, by refusing to or having the law say we can't write off our taxes, our state taxes against our federal tax, is kind of is difficult on people. You know, it hurts Lieutenant Joe and his family, and it hurts lots and lots of other people. And I get the theory behind it, is that, you know, why should a no-tax state like Florida lose out because the federal government lets New Jersey write off their high taxes? You know, there's common sense to it, which is why I haven't screamed and hollered about it, because I kind of get it. But at the same time, I can't do anything about it. I'm only allowed to vote once, and there's very few conservative people in New Jersey. It's a made up of it's a very, very blue state here in New Jersey. It's very liberal, very left-wing. We have left-wing people running the state, and there's no way around that. So I can't, no matter what I do, I can't get a conservative in there to change the laws. So I think we need to look at that for people's lives anyway when we go. So when we look at Bernie is surging. Do you think they're going to let Bernie be the nominee? Do you think they're going to allow Bernie Sanders to be the standard bearer for the Democratic Party in a presidential election? An avowed socialist / communist. Is this really where we've come to a major American party? Now, I think what's interesting is that we do see a lot of people on the left pushing back. They do not want to see Bernie Sanders, the communist, as the standard bearer for their party. Unfortunately, I think those people are in the minority. And I don't mean they are minorities. I mean they are in the minority in their party. I think the Democrat Party now is really a socialist party with people who really believe that socialism is the way to go. We know young people think socialism is the way to go. We know that there's lots and lots of people out there rallying for socialism. The fact that Bernie is surging, and that's who they're choosing. Now, let's take a minute and think about that. I mean, what are their real choices? They have Joe Biden, handsy Joe Biden, or sleepy Joe Biden, as the president calls him. They have Ms. Klobuchar, who, you know, I don't know much about her to really say a lot, but what I do know is not that impressive. We have the woman from Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren, who is left-wing. She's a proven liar. She seems weak. Is she going to go toe-to-toe with Xi Jinping over in China and demand new trade policies and military stuff with him? I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen. So I don't see anybody really on that side that's strong. Now, Michael Bloomberg, or whatever you want to call him now, he was the mayor of New York, and he was a Democrat, and he switched to Republican. And basically, he jumped on board all the good work Rudy Giuliani had done. And for those of you out there in America listening to me who don't know Michael Bloomberg, you know, multi-billionaire, hey, God bless him. He turned his business into a multi-billion dollar business. I applaud him for that. Good job. Good job, Mr. Bloomberg. I would like to do the same thing. So I don't hold anything against him that he's a billionaire. What I do hold against him is the fact that his policies would be detrimental to America. He has already said that he would probably open the borders, that he would turn around many of the things that President Trump has done. He would regulate your soda. Now, you might hear that as a joke. You hear people on national radio talking about, you know, Michael Bloomberg tells you how much to drink. He really did that. You talk about the nanny state. He went into New York City and he decided that, you know, people were too obese. People were obese. There's a lot of obesity. Now, is there a lot of obesity? Of course there is. Of course there's a lot of obesity. Is it healthy? It's not. Are a lot of kids obese? Yes, they are. They eat very sugary foods and they don't eat necessarily the right foods. And there's a whole nother story to that. But Mayor Bloomberg decided that, you know, what we can do to help people, and that's our liberals are always there to help us, aren't they? They help us right out of our clothes, they help us out of our money, out of our lifestyles. They were going to help everyone, but he implanted a law in the city of New York that you could not buy like a 64-ounce Big Gulp, if that's what you wanted. You could only buy, I think, you could buy three 12-ouncers if you want, but you couldn't buy one big 64-ounce one. Now, how that makes any sense, I don't know, because if I really want 64 ounces of soda, I'll buy three of them. But what he made the law, you couldn't do it. Then he decided that there's too much salt, too much hypertension, too much blood pressure problems, not good for people's health. So instead of letting people make that decision, he said, you know, oh, there'll be no salt on the table in restaurants. And if you want the salt, you have to specifically ask for salt. Okay, I want my salt on my table when my hamburger comes, because I want to put some salt on it or on my salad. Who's the government to tell me what I can and cannot eat? But that's the kind of guy he is. He's an anti-gun guy. He was the stop and frisk guy, right? He saved lots and lots and lots of lives. We talked about this a couple weeks ago with the stop and frisk. It was probably done inappropriately in some instances, but it saved how many thousands of lives by getting those guns off the street and making people think they might get stopped and frisked, so they left their gun home instead of killing each other. And we see the rise in New York crime right now. It's really kind of getting out of control. So Michael Bloomberg is looking like the moderate, and that's how they're going to paint him. Michael Bloomberg is the moderate. He is the billionaire businessman like Trump, who runs a great empire, unlike, you know, the terrible, you know, Trump empire. Michael Bloomberg runs the Bloomberg news services, and he is the billionaire with common sense, with dignity, with a cool head that will do the right things. That's how they're going to maybe try and portray him, as they try and steal it away from Bernie. So, you know, and of course, Bernie's not really a fighter. He's not going to fight back. He said recently that he would consider having, I know he likes Ocasio-Cortez, but and she's too young to be on the ticket. But, you know, he would just do very, very serious damage to our country if Bernie got it. But he's the leader right now. He is the soul of that party, and that's the way they're moving. So we have to look and see what's going on there. I think Joe Biden, I never thought of him as a bad person. I thought of him as just, you know, he's just a politician. You know, he's in the state of Delaware. He's a powerful guy in the state of Delaware. Ne'er-do-well. He ended up being Obama's vice president, and he got to bumble around and stumble around. But I do say that there comes a time when he might not be capable of being the president physically. You know, that happens to all of us. You know, there'll come a time when Lieutenant Joe won't be able to talk on the microphone because I'll just be losing my faculties. It happens to every human being as you get further down the road of life. And Joe Biden really just doesn't appear to be up to the challenge. And I think he's pretty much out of the show. So that's kind of where we're going. You know, I think we're gonna have something fun coming up in the second or third segment today, because I really want to do that. But I'm glad you're all out there. Thank you very much for listening. Reach out to me, please, at Pangaro Global. You can tweet to me, and I'll tweet back to you. And we will be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Spreading the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world. To unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. We are the vision of the voices. Welcome to the new era in communications. America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome back in my best radio guy voice. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. And I do want to thank everybody out there that has followed me on Twitter, who follows my comments, who says things to me, send me tweets, I tweet back to you. It's really great to connect with the audience that's out there, because I do like to hear what you think. You know, this way we have a conversation going back and forth. So some of the other things that are kind of going on. Now, when I talk about my pages of outrages, for a long time, we have all been sitting back waiting to see when is justice going to come to those people who attempted to commit a coup d'etat against a sitting president of the United States. Now, you all know my point of view because you've listened, but I will reiterate it for those new listeners because I have a feeling there's new listeners all the time. But the reality is, I have said all along that I don't care that this happened to Donald Trump. If it happened to Barack Obama, I would be just as outraged, just as upset, just as concerned for my country when the government agencies use their power to go after an American citizen and someone who is running for president, and then continue to go after them after they've won because you don't like them, you don't like the result of the election, and you want to overturn it. Now, you can argue all you want until you're blue in the face that that is not what happened, but I'm telling you, if you are going to sit there today at this point after everything that has come out and not recognize what has happened here, you are a danger to our country. And I don't mean that in a light way. I mean, if you can't see that common sense to realize what has just happened for these last 3 years with people who have lied, who have caught faking up FISA warrants, who have made up dossiers on the president to start an entire hoax, who saw the Mueller investigation fall apart. I can't imagine. You know, I've been an investigator for many, many, many years, and I've had other agencies start a case, and then it turns out that it actually took place in my jurisdiction. And they'll call me and say, hey, could you come over here and get the files? We'll turn it over to you, and you can get going on it. And I'd show up, and I'd say, okay, what have you got so far? And they would lay out their case. And in most of those cases, you would see actual evidence of criminal activity, actual evidence that somebody did something illegal, inappropriate, or wrong that you would start an investigation for. I can't imagine that Robert Mueller, although when we saw him testify, we realized kind of a lot in the Joe Biden kind of camp. I think he's really at the end of his career ability to really function properly. He seemed like he was lost. He seemed like he was tired. He didn't know all the facts. I don't think he had a lot to do with it. I think he was another part of the swamp conspiracy that he was going to come in with all this credibility and lead this investigation. Really, he was just a figurehead because we saw who ran that investigation. They were all Hillary supporters, Hillary donors, all these people. We saw that the text messages between the FBI agents, how much they hated Trump and how they were going to have an insurance policy in case he won. This is what I'm saying. If you don't see this for what it really is, you are a danger to this country because I can't make you see it. If it's not clear to you what has happened, then you really need to, I don't know, take a deep breath, go back and read a book, do something. And I would be just as upset if they did this to Barack Obama. Because even though I don't agree with him politically, if he won the election, he would be my president. Right? He was my president for 8 years, and I respected the office. I didn't like his policies. So that's the danger to our country. And if you don't think that happened, or let me say even this, even worse, if you do see that coup d'etat for what it was, for what it is, because it's continuing, if you do see that and you say, well, that's okay, because I hate Trump, we got to get rid of him, you're more than a danger to this country, right? You're a traitor. If you see that happen and you are okay with it, because that is a terrible thing to happen to our country. Do you realize when you start to go down that road where justice, rule of law, facts, where all of that is really whatever we want it to be, whatever we want to make it up to be, as long as it suits our purpose, you realize when we get to that point, we no longer have the protections of the American government. We are now at the mercy of whoever is in charge. And let's ask this question. Do you not think, by looking at some of the people running for president, if they had a chance to tell you what size soda you can drink, you don't think they would tell you other things you can and can't do, whether you like it or not? And there'd be no recourse. there would be no recourse whatsoever. So this is all very, very dangerous. It's coming to light. And what I'm saying is my outrage is my point. This is a long way to get to my point, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate you hanging in there. I've been saying all along that I had concerns about Attorney General Barr. He seems on the surface to be squared away. He seems on the surface to be a crime fighter who is really just as outraged as all of us at what he saw happen by the government, and he is going to go in and take it apart piece by piece. That's what we all kind of think, don't we? I think that's what we all hope. But the reality is, we have already seen that Comey, who we know lied, who we know he leaked, we know he did all these things, that if you and I did it, you'd be sitting in jail right now. You'd be sitting in jail right now. We saw that they had an opportunity to prosecute him, and they chose not to prosecute him. Now, a lot of people jumped up and down and said, well, you know what? That's because they're looking at him for a lot worse things. They're really going to go after him for a lot worse things. Boy, they're going to get him. When you got somebody who's dirty and they did something wrong, you get them for everything you can. And I'll explain that concept to you in a second. But the next thing we have seen now, the shoe drop, is we've now seen Mr. McCabe, that we know lied, that lost his job at the FBI for lying. And now we've just had an announcement that we're not going to pursue him criminally either. Right? So there's two of the main players that we have an opportunity to bring them to justice for what they did. And our Department of Justice has determined we're not going to pursue those charges. Now, once again, I tweeted this out the other day. I tweeted out that, you know, hey, watch out. Looks like the fix might be in. They now let McCabe off the hook. And some people tweeted back to me and said, listen, Lieutenant, I know it looks like that, but man, Bob Barr is going to go after this guy. William Barr is going to go after these guys. They're going to get them for the next level, bigger stuff. I'm on the record as saying, I hope so. I hope they're right and I am wrong. But let me tell you how an investigation should work. Okay. If I am investigating somebody for some particular type of crime, say drug dealing, right? That's an easy one to understand. Somebody is selling heroin, cocaine, not marijuana, because that's all going to be legal, so nobody wants to hear about that anymore. But heroin, cocaine, fentanyl, you know, these pills that are killing everybody. And in the course of my investigation, I stop two people that are coming out of the location where the drugs are being sold. They're part of the scheme. Maybe they're not Mr. Big or Mrs. Big, but they're part of the scheme, and I arrest them. And now I'm going to charge them. The reason you arrest them and charge them, first of all, they committed a crime. But second, you need to get information to go to the next level, right? How are you going to get Mr. and Mrs. Big if you don't have people on the inside telling you what happened? So you charge those people at the bottom. Now you say to those people at the bottom, hey, guess what? If you're convicted of this, you're going to jail. Unless you think you can help yourself with some information you can trade for some help on your charge. Perfectly legal, done all the time. That's how this works. So the concern for non-investigators, I guess, would be, well, of course anybody would just lie so they could get out from under. You don't just go on what they tell you. They provide you with information that you use to go further, to further the investigation, and then you confirm what they said. They tell you this guy every day gets drugs from this place. Well, you go and confirm that. That proves that their information is good, all right? That they're reliable, they're telling you the right thing. There's a whole process to this. People aren't just willy-nilly running around believing somebody who lied to them, all right? So the reason you do that is so that then they will give you information on Mr. and Mrs. Big, so you can go after Mr. and Mrs. Big. Now, here's my theory. So you get that concept first, right? You understand that, right? You get the little guys, you roll them, and then they tell you about the big guys, then you can go get the big guys. I'm concerned that the tentacles of the swamp stretch in directions and ways we really can't even imagine. We see Donald Trump out there trying to drain this swamp, and we see he's having some effect. He's doing this and that. But that entrenched governing class, all of them, they live the lives that you and I don't live. We don't have the lifestyles that they have. Our kids don't go to the best schools in the world. We don't make $100,000 a year and after 20 years have $198 million. We don't have that kind of a lifestyle, right? They do. And all of them, And none of them wants to give up that lifestyle. That's why they're fighting Trump so hard, because he's really trying to, I think, empty that swamp a little bit. So my theory is this. The tentacles of the swamp realize that if this investigation goes as far as it should go, it is going to go right to the top of the Obama administration. It is going to rope in Barack Obama, his attorney general, his vice president, Joe Biden, a whole bunch of senators, a whole bunch of congressmen. It's going to rope in other players, probably Hillary Clinton. We're going to go through all of those people. And that is going to be a devastating thing to the swamp creatures. So I am concerned, like I've said all along, that there'll be some minor players locked up, but all the big players are going to walk away. Because you got to remember, some of these big players probably have information on both sides. So you know what? Sure, you're going to come after me. You're going to take me down. I'm going to give up the information I have to give up on the people above me. But I'm also going to tell you about Mr. Jones and Mrs. Smith and Mrs. Here, who's on your team that are doing the same kind of things. So I think there's a move to make this look really good. But I have a feeling that we have now seen Comey skate on his first referral for criminal charges. We've seen McCabe now skate on his criminal referral. We see that the investigation of Hillary, which we all see, was frauded up from the beginning. She absolutely destroyed evidence. Could you imagine? They subpoena your phone and your cell phone, and you smash them with hammers in the FBI. They let you do that? How does that happen? You think that would happen to you if you were being brought? You know, come to the FBI, we're investigating you for a crime, bring your phones, your computers, bring everything in here, and we're going to get done with the interview. We're not going to advise you of Miranda. We're not going to record any of it. We're not going to take any statements. You can bring friends into the room, too. And when we're done, let's lay out all these phones and computers and let's smash them with hammers so that the information is non-retrievable. Why would you do that? Why, as an investigator, would you not just hold on to those phones? Download all that stuff. Why would you not just keep that? Because they wanted to clear her. And the fact that the first thing our attorney general did was go back and go, we're reopening that case right now, get an indictment in about 7 minutes, and then go arrest Mrs. Clinton. She's the third one to now skate from the swamp. Right, so these are some pretty big players. Like I said, I hope I am wrong. I hope that Bob Barr comes out next week or in a month or two and goes, we're indicting this one and that one and the other one. And is there still a good chance for that? I think there is. I don't mean to speak out of both sides of my mouth. I'm just looking at what's happening in front of me. I know if I was running an investigation, I would not keep letting these people off the hook. I would charge them with every possible thing I could charge them with. You know, you grab Comey, you lock him up for what he did, you bring him in, just like they did for other people who have, you know, released government information. You bring him in and you say, listen, James, it's going to be tough for you. You were the head of the FBI, but you're going to federal prison for 3 to 5 years. And really be serious about it. Or you might have some information about this coup d'etat you might want to reveal to us so that we can clear this mess up and maybe help you. You see, that's why you charge them with the first thing. Then you get Mr. McCabe and you say, you know, you got fired for lying to Congress. They want to put one of the Trump guys, I can't think of his name right now, the guy with the white hair, it's falling right out of my head. Can you imagine that? They want to put this guy in jail for 9 years for being confused in his interview and lying to them. But here's this McCabe guy who lied, and Comey who leaked, and Hillary who destroyed evidence, and lied, and nothing. Crickets. Letting them go. Why do you think that is? I think that's only common sense. You know, if I was brought in, if I was the investigator, now every investigator, even all my cop friends out there will tell you, lots of people have different ways they would go about the investigation. If Mr. Barr is deciding that he doesn't want to clutter up the final indictments with all these little things, he just wants to get the big indictment and get them, maybe. That might be what he's doing. But that's not how Lieutenant Joe would do it. I would bring them in for everything they did, and when there was more things to charge them with, I would add that on top of it. Because then you have more leverage to get to the truth, because this is a very, very thick layer of deceit and lies and cover-ups. And remember this, the most important part of this whole mess that we're seeing. Everything that happened with the FISA warrants, with the lying to get the FISA warrants, with the fake dossier, all of this stuff comes down to one reality. And I've said this since the very beginning. Everybody expected Hillary Clinton to win. And if she won, we never would have seen any of this. Not one word of this would have come out. We never would have known there was faked up FISA warrants. We never would have known that the dossier was fake and unverified. We never would have known anything. They just would have won and moved on. And Comey would probably still be running the FBI, and Clapper would still be there, and all these people from the swamp would still have their jobs. And nobody would care because Trump would have moved on. He's a billionaire. Okay, I lost. I moved on. But instead, Trump won. And I can only imagine the panic that must have ran through them, which is why they faked up a lot of different material to go after him, to discredit the election, to discredit the entire thing. Because once they were out, they had November 6th until January 20th to whitewash everything they did as best as they possibly could before he came in and took office. And then he had control of the levers of power and the records and the people and all the things that he could reveal. Okay? So keep that in mind. That is the essence of this whole thing. They never, ever thought that Trump would win. They thought Hillary was going to win. This would have been buried under the carpet. Nobody throughout history would have known that this happened. But unfortunately for them, that's not how it worked out. And now we are seeing the kicking and screaming of all of them, trying to protect themselves, trying to protect the swamp, trying to keep the good things they got, and trying to keep justice from prevailing across here for all of us, for you and for me and for everybody that comes after us. Because if this happened once and it's not rectified, it will happen again. We'll be back in a minute. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe. We'll see you here on Chasing Justice on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Here we come, just a walking down the street singing doo-a-dee-dee-dee-dee-dum-dee-dee-dee. You didn't know I could sing, did you? Welcome back to Chasing Justice with your host, Lieutenant Joe. You know, we talk about some heavy topics here. We talk about a lot of things that go on that are very, very serious. Justice is a very, very serious topic. Justice runs through all our lives, through our religious lives, through our political lives, through our family lives, through everything. Justice is the key to a civilized society. Justice is the key to a righteous society. So we talk about some very, very heavy things. So I want to lighten it up a little bit, I think, as best as I can. You know, I see something. I'm a big fan of astronomy, you know, the stars and the moons and all that stuff out there. And I have been fascinated with outer space for probably 25 years. As an adult, I happened to see a special one time with Dr. Stephen Hawking. And Dr. Hawking was talking about time and distance. And I always looked up at the stars and I saw the stars and, you know, oh, hey, you know what? Tonight, if you look up, you could see Jupiter. And then there's this, you know, Jupiter up there. I'll never forget one night we had friends here and they brought their kids. And it was, I think it was New Year's Eve. It was a New Year's Eve. And they all came over and the son, who was probably 15 at the time, brought his telescope. Because he wanted to tell me. He knew I liked the stars and all that stuff. And he goes, hey, you know what? If you look up tonight, you can actually see the rings around Saturn. And I said, get out of here. He goes, oh, yeah, you can see Jupiter. It's unbelievable, right? So he sets up this. Now, it was freezing out. And he sets up this telescope in the front yard. We're all out there taking turns. And, you know, it's blurry. And you got a kid trying to do this. You know, I'm trying to play with it. I'm trying to get it to come in. It's not an expensive telescope. It's a telescope. And the kid's looking at it. And all of a sudden he goes, oh, there it is. Come here and take a look. And I try not to touch it with anything. So it goes, he says it, and I look in and I see this thing. And it's a big bright, and next thing I know, there's the rings of Saturn. You could actually see it. It was absolutely one of the most amazing things I had ever seen. But what really got me connected to understanding space, because the concepts are really, for me, they're religious. The concepts of space and time are religious. So this is not going to be a preaching segment, but I'm going to say that it helped me to try and define, you know, in my search for faith. A lot of us are searching for faith, all right? I know a lot of people out there in the Chasing Justice audience are faithful people, or at least you're open to the idea of faith. And I know, you know, on the bigger scheme, America Out Loud is a place for people of faith. That's where a lot of people of faith come to, because we want truth and justice and listening and hearing and learning. And when I was listening to Stephen Hawking and he started to explain about the distances, you know, the distances from one star to another, from one galaxy to another, those concepts were foreign to me. I knew the stars were far away. You know, I see our star, our sun is 93 million miles away. There it is, big ball in the sky. It's hot. You can get a sunburn. That's a star. And I thought that was cool. But when you realize that the nearest star to us, and for all my science friends out there, I'm not going to get this exactly right, but I'm going to be pretty close. If you took our fastest rocket right now, you know, boom, one of these big rockets we got that goes 18,000 miles an hour once it's up in space, it would take 4,000 years to get to the nearest star in our solar system. Right, I'm not our solar system, in our galaxy. It would take 4,000 years to get to the nearest star to us here on Earth in the Milky Way galaxy. Never mind the stars all the way on the other side. Right? It would take 100,000 years to get to the other side of our galaxy. That to me was a turning point kind of in my understanding of how big things are. And then you realize when you look up at that night sky and you see those millions of bright spots, lots and lots of those bright spots you're seeing are not stars. They're actually other galaxies that are so far away from us. They are trillions of miles away. You know, the term light year, that's the distance light can travel in 1 year. And when you see some of these galaxies that we can see their light has traveled that far and gotten to us. They are 500 million light years away. You know how far away that is? How big that is? This is where the religious component started to filter in to me. That I started to try and think about space and time and how I didn't seek out a religious component. The religious component came to me as I started to understand the distances. The distance involved between us and that moment of the Big Bang, you know, 13 billion years ago, you know, and those concepts. How do you have all of this material, everything that we can see in the universe, was condensed down to a finite point, a tiny little point, and then it exploded and became everything we can see in the universe. How does that happen? Let's see if science explain that one. by saying it's just happenstance. It just is. The world just came into being. Really? So I would turn around, and my first thought, and this is how my head works, I'm saying, okay, the world just came into being. It just happened. So all of that material that exploded in the Big Bang and came out and became all the stuff we can now see across the universe, where did all that stuff come from? Where did the rock and the gas and all this stuff that makes up the physical part, you know, go outside in your front yard, on your front lawn, and stomp your feet, and you feel that? That's the ground. That is part of that universe. Where did all of that come from? How did it just happen all by itself? It just came into being, and there it is. I don't pretend to be the smartest guy in the world, but I like to think through it. I like to say, okay, so it just happened. This stuff just happened. Really? I can't come up with a theory to explain how something comes out of nothing. Now, people who don't want to look at it with a religious connotation, they want to say, these mysteries that you have, this whole religious thing, the guy in the clouds, that's all made up. That's made up because humans were scared of the thunder and they had to come up with the reasons these things happen. There is no God. There is simply, the stuff of the universe. And I say, back up a second. Take a minute. Take a deep breath. Listen to what you're saying. Something comes from nothing. So I was at my friend's house one night, and we were sitting there, and they had did you ever see a cake plate. You know, it's got the glass cover. You put the cake underneath. You put the cover on top. You could see the cake through the glass. It looks beautiful until you're ready to eat it. Keeps the flies off it, I guess, in the summer. And I looked at that, and I said, so you are telling me that everything in this universe just came into being out of nothing. That's not even to mention the space that this universe fills. Where did that come from? But that's another question I'll get to in a minute. All the stuff, the rock, the gas, the things that make up the physical universe, it just came into being. I said, so let's look at that empty cake plate thing right there. Is there a cake in there? No, there's no cake in there. Okay, so let's just stare at it, and let's see if a cake just appears. Now, that seems like a silly experiment. But isn't it really exactly the same thing? If someone didn't mix the ingredients to make the cake, put the icing on it, cook it, and then put it underneath that tray, no cake in the world is going to show up there. There'll be no cake underneath that thing, no matter how long you wait. Because you know what? It's funny. It's been about 10 years since I had that experience. And every time I go to my friend's house, I look in his cupboard thing and I go, hey, no cake yet, huh? And we have to laugh about it. But think about that. Because you can't put a finger on it, because you can't point to something, does that mean that it's not true? And this is where faith comes in. This is where my faith comes in anyway, because I struggle with this. You know, if you're intelligent, you have to struggle with this. You know, I believe there is a God that made all of this, that made me. And I'm frustrated that I can't see him. I pray. And you don't always get the answers you want to your prayers, do you? What if someone is sick? A parent, a child, a spouse, and you're praying and praying and praying, and they die anyway. It would be really easy to say, you know what? Nobody listened to me. There is nobody there. We are completely on our own. And I understand that. That is a battle intellect has to have with faith. And as time went by in my life, I tried to understand that. You know, how can I still have faith if my intellect is telling me, nobody's really listening? Nobody's really listening because it doesn't really change anything. Little children still have cancer. I don't know how God could allow that if there was a God there. You know, we see rotten people get to have wonderful lives. They have great lives. They die old in their beds, rich and happy and had wonderful lives. And little children suffer with cancer and die. Our soldiers go over to protect our country and die in a roadside bomb in some dirt road. Somewhere in some other country, screaming for their mothers. How is that right? right? So these are the arguments that intellect has to have with faith. So I tried to understand how space and time could do that. And the only way I could really quantify that in my brain and really put it together was you have to look for other experiences you have. You have to look for other experiences you have, because the face of God might not be that white guy with the beard coming out of the cloud. It might not be Jesus walking up the street, you know, with his arms outstretched to you. That happened once, 2,000 something years ago. That may happen again, but it doesn't happen to us. You know, how many times you see angels flying around appearing to people? You read the Bible, happened all the time. The angel Gabriel showed up here. The angel Gabriel showed up over there. The angel Michael showed up here and spoke to people. You don't have angel Gabriel showing up to you, do you? Asking you questions, telling you things. You have dreams where God's in your dream and he tells you to, you know, do this or do. No, we don't really have that. We have been tasked with faith. And as I try to go round and round with this, realizing the great distances between these galaxies, from the moment of the Big Bang, it took me back to, and this is the next part of my thought process, where did the stuff come from? Now, where did the empty space come from? What is infinity? What is this never ends? It has physical space. You can get in a rocket ship and fly there. You can look back 13 billion years and you can see there's galaxies 13 billion million light years away. So far, we can't even comprehend how far away that is. And then it just keeps on going. It just keeps on going. What is that physical space? Scientists, answer me that. And you can't. They can't answer that. This is where I say, I am a man of faith and I'm a man of intellect. And I am willing to say, okay, if religion is not real, show me the answer for where these things came from. Because I only have a couple of choices. I can either blow that thought off and say, well, there must be something to it. I just don't understand the chemical reactions between nothing and nothing and nothing that makes everything. I don't know. Maybe I'm not smart enough to understand how nothing and nothing and nothing makes everything we can see in the universe. Just like that pie thing, right? The cake thing. Someday there'll be a cake under there, right? It's just going to appear there because that's how things happen. Then when you see the distances and you realize how far away this is, and then you realize that the universe just continues on and on and on. Where does that go? It's all theories. Scientists only have theories. They have no fact whatsoever. They have theory. But their theories, they can't really recreate. So isn't that the function of science, how you prove a scientific fact? You take a theory, you take the facts you have, and then you recreate it. Right? And then you recreate it. So, oh, that proves it. That proves the science thing. Maybe I'm wrong. Science people. At Pangaro Global. Let me know. How do you prove a scientific fact? You have facts, you have evidence, and you recreate the experiment to say, this is how it happened. They can't. All they can tell me is, yeah, faith is nice for weak people. You know, science is the key. Science is the key. Everything just happened out of nothing. Physical rock of all the universe. The rock you're living on just came from nowhere. Just like that pie. It's going to show up underneath that pie plate thing, right? Of course it is. The physical size of this universe that never ends. So I had to ask myself, if I cannot wrap my head around logically how something can come out of nothing, I'm smart enough to know that there's probably a formula for that, although no one has been able to come up with it. So I have to say, if God doesn't show up to me, the angels aren't flying around my house, meeting me on the beach and saying, hey, by the way, I'm Gabriel, and God wants you to do this. I'm divining all of this through my faith. I'd say it would be really helpful to see God, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be really helpful if angels did show up to you, if you know, God did come to you? Wouldn't that be so much easier? Wouldn't one time the whole world just stopped and there was God appearing to everyone and said, hey, by the way, I know you haven't seen me in 2,000 years, but here I am. And let me show you this. Let me open the Atlantic Ocean, right? and then close it back down and say, now listen, I'm telling you, you got to have faith. I don't know when I'm coming back again, but I'm a coming. And then leaves. Wouldn't that, now a lot of people wouldn't believe that, but a lot of people would, because they would actually physically see it. So I'm saying, if physically seeing things, like that cake popping up underneath the thing, if a cake popped up under there and nobody cooked it, I would say, wow, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. But there's still no cake there. The universe is still unexplainable. The scientists have no answer where any of this came from. Where life, where the very life that lives within all of us, to even have you sitting there listening to me on the radio, me talking, the fact that we're even here is a miracle. So I look for facts to help me. And here's what I found. I saw the face of God when my wife got pregnant. And I felt that little baby kicking in her belly. And I knew that was life. I see the face of God when I see a sunrise that comes up in the morning and the colors all change and the birds start to sing and the breeze starts to blow. I see the face of God in the beautiful things this planet has to offer. When you stand at the beach and you feel the waves rushing over your legs in the summer, that warm water, and you see that little fish scurry on by. That's the face of God. When I look at my wife and I realize how much I love her, when I see her take care of my children, when I see my daughter-in-law who just had this beautiful little baby, when I see her hold that child and love that child, I see the face of God. When I hear laughter of a bunch of friends, I hear the voice of God. When I see an animal, the dopey dogs that we have here all the time, right? I talk about them all the time, all these rescues. But I see the glint in their eye of love. And they come and they'll come up to you and nuzzle you and you cuddle them. And between these two species, you can feel love. That is God. When I see people grieving at the funeral of a loved one, when I see people crying over a terrible, terrible loss and consoling each other, I see God. He is all around us if we look. He is everywhere if we look. There is our fact. The scientists can't come up with it. All they can do is say our faith is wrong, but our faith has concrete things we can point to. And I look to them every single day. So, hey, thanks for being with me here today. I really enjoyed this afternoon. We'll be back soon on Chasing Justice. In the meantime, remember, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe, signing off on America